All right. Thank you for being here. I appreciate it so much, man.
No problem, my brother. No problem, man.
All right. So just to start off, you've had a really fascinating journey in the UK dancehall scene, which has been really meteoric, in my opinion. What first drew you to this genre, and how did your older sister's taste in music influence your career path?
All right. So basically, the whole influence from my sister was everything, because that's where it started from. That's where the whole, music started from, the influence and the original sound that I fell in love with from early, Yeah, man.
Well, it's perfect. I mean, you've mentioned you have a really deep appreciation for Jamaican culture and music. Can you share, some of the roots of this passion and just the impact it's had on your development as an artist?
Yeah, Jamaica's it's funny because it makes you as a person, because even like in the culture, it's not just the music and the fashion and everything. It becomes of your morals and stuff become the same morals, as them. And not that everyone ain't got the same morals, but just certain little different things in society. And it's built me to be a good person, man. It's built me to be an appreciative and understanding, caring, down to earth person at the same time, a very appreciative. And yeah, man, and obviously what it's done for me as a person, like that little tiny island has literally like built my whole life and my whole career. It's crazy, man.
Completely. Well, it's absolutely wild. I mean, I would just like to get into the virality of your work because, beginning with the freestyle that you did on BBC One Extra, I mean, it completely catapulted you to viral success. I mean, can you walk me through that experience and just what resulted from just that freestyle?
So I'd gone viral before that freestyle. It's funny because I'd gone viral and hit like a million views, a couple million views, and then I went viral again with another. The first one was a freestyle called 100 Gyal, and that went viral first, and then the second one was a song named Dougal Dagger, and that went viral as well. And I actually done a freestyle on a very popular UK media channel named Black Box, which a lot of like your big artists like Dave and people like that, that's where they kind of got their recognition from Black Box, and that done really well. That went like quite viral. Like that was that hit a good 12, 15 million views, counting up all the views. Yeah, a good amount of million views, man, 20 million plus. And that's what stemmed off these freestyles, and everyone wanted a freestyle from me at the time. And it done well. And the specific one on BBC Asian Network, that one there is funny because it done what it done at the time and whatever it was at the time, but it weren't until 4 years later when it was reposted just before I was about to drop a new freestyle, and they reposted it, and that's when it hit its like peak.
Well, it's interesting. I'm curious about that interview. Did what was that experience in their interview going, back to 4 years ago, of course, when they cut it? Were they cutting it or what was
No, no, no,
happening
no. It's
there?
like, all right. There's a lot of confusion from, again, it's just a culture thing. Some people really understand it, but in UK, or I'm not sure what it's like. Where are you? In LA,
LA.
right? So I'm not sure. See, it depends what kind of genre you're into. But in the
Yeah.
Jamaican dance or reggae industry, we have something this name a forward, a
Tell
forward.
me.
Or that's a rewind or a pull up. It's like when you're so it's so good, man, for pull up that. So it's just that the whole actual freestyle was like, I done it, and they was like, yo, pull up that, that's mad. That's I can rewind and go again, but you don't see that part. You just see it when they stop it. So it was just so good that they wanted to go again, pretty much.
Good, because that was my sentiment. When I watched it, dude, I was floored. I was just like, going in. That's everybody was like that,
the whole
right?
freestyle on YouTube, like you see that part and you see them rewind it and it starts from the beginning and it goes right through the whole track. Yeah.
Perfect. So that's what I'm going to check out actually later tonight, because I've been wanting to see the whole thing. But that really brings me into the next point. So you mentioned a couple of your songs, of course, 100 Gyal and Turn Red. Okay, so let's just get into that. So they become incredibly popular, sparking a lot of just really cool discussion. Memes, of course, but I mean, the songs themselves, are pretty epic. How do you feel about just what those how those songs have performed, the viral nature, and just the discussion it's ignited, because they're hugely popular?
I mean, none of my songs have hit like Turn Red's hit. Mm-hmm. This has hit another level, and I'm honestly still processing it. Mm-hmm. Like, crazy that none of my songs have ever done that. This is like, and it's really weird because the song of Turn Red is made up of two different songs, two previous songs that were already recorded and released,
mm-hmm.
and one little new lyric. So basically, the Big Bumba Club, Spliff a Bus and I'm a Ed part was from a drum and bass track that I'd done 5 years ago. It's got over 1 million streams. It's done really well in the drum and bass industry. It was featuring a big drum and bass artist as well named Shabba D. He's really popular in the UK. And the other song was from the album that I dropped last year called Listen Clear, and that was Waleepa Blood Clot Smoking At It. And basically, the situation was, I was in Jamaica and I was doing loads and loads of work, and I'd been there for about 2 weeks at this point. And I was tired, and I was in Kingston, and I think I'd gone out partying that night. And I'd got in and I'm like, oh, right, I got this freestyle tomorrow. So we got the songs. I had three different songs, and one of them was already planned out. It's like, it's kind of like a drill, the kind of grimy drill stuff that I kind of do. It was like that. Okay, like that's what I'm saying. I got that. I'm like, I've got two other rhythms. Like, I'm going to do this on this one. I'm going to do that on that. And I just kind of chuck the lyrics together. And that's what went viral. The freestyle just went viral, like absolutely everywhere. And it didn't stop. And that's when he said to me, like, yo, we need to record this song. Like, we need to actually put the audio out. And I was like, all right, cool. And this was only like about a month ago, maybe a little bit more, 5 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And yeah, we put the song out, and like, wow, like it's just keep going from like strength to strength to strength. It's like, it's just absolutely crazy. It's just hit like worldwide, like a big hit, like international hit worldwide. It's crazy. Like I'm still like, even looking at the streams, you know, we're nearly touching like 3 million streams, and you know, we're independent. We've got no label.
Yeah, of course.
Behind us, and you know, it's a lot of streams, 3 million, and it ain't slowing down. And it's only a couple of weeks. So Turn Red's been crazy, man. This has hit on a completely different level. Even as I'm talking now, I'm still processing everything that's going on around with it and everything. So.
And even like that,
you know, years I've been, trying to get big features and stuff in Jamaica, and now I've got like two big features ready to drop a remix. I'm dropping a Jamaica remix with an artist named Iwata, very very popular artist in Jamaica, and then I'm dropping another remix with a guy called Young Breda from Trinidad, very very popular in Trinidad, and then I've got a UK remix with some big artists in the UK, with Big Zeke's, Young Saber, and just waiting for the last artist. So, yeah.
So that begs the question. That's going to be sick. So you have multiple remixes coming.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you thinking about doing a US remix? Because UK Dancehall has really made its way to the US, you know, since I would say about 2016. it's been popularized here?
I think at the moment, the level that I've got it at is because I've done a Sweden remix with the biggest YouTubers in Sweden.
Yeah.
And that was a kind of like, and more of an entertainment kind of funny remix, more than anything. And then we've got the big Jamaica remix, and we've got the big Trinidad remix, and we've got the big UK remix. It's like, for me personally, like, unless it's a giant, I'm not doing any more remixes. Like, there's going to be that, like, don't get me wrong, there's a lot of big producers that have got the vocals and some house and drum and bass remix. You're going to hear a lot of remixes, but specifically for actual remixes with new artists, unless it's a giant, unless it's Vybz Kartel, unless it's Busta Rhymes, yeah, no one's going to really get a look in. And I won't be surprised if that does happen. I would not be surprised.
It's got to happen. It's going to happen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, before we touch back on your current music, I would like to kind of hear more about your relationship with drum and bass. I mean, these UK staple genres. You just mentioned drum and bass, of course. You know, how do you feel about jungle? Things like this.
I don't listen to it. When I was younger, I listened to drum and bass, jungle music, when jungle music was jungle music, and it was heavily influenced by reggae and dance art. It's not really like that no more. It's a lot more electronic these days. I don't listen to it. I don't go to any drum and bass raves. I don't enjoy the music like that. I do the music because I know people appreciate it. And the certain style that I've got on drum and bass is definitely a popular style, i.e. why Turn Red worked. But grime, again, I don't listen to that type of music. There might be a specific certain songs here and there that I like, but I'm a straight reggae and dance hall fan, man. That's all I listen to. And I like R&B as well, funny enough. I know that probably not fits into the criteria, but I'm an R&B fan as well.
No, I think it definitely fits into the criteria. Who are you listening to?
So I'm a big Jagged Edge fan. Yeah, I've always been a big Jagged Edge fan. And when it comes to like culture music, I'm just like a big fan of like Garnet Silk and them type of artists there. I love to listen to them type of artists there. And when it comes to dancehall, obviously, you know, you've got your greats, your Vybz Kartels and your Massacres, and then you've got your new artists that are just coming through now. So it's a whole blend of artists.
Yeah. Well, absolutely sick. So speaking back to Jamaican culture, something I found really interesting about you, you not only have a love and a passion, of course, for Jamaican culture as a whole, as it pertains to music, but Jamaican cuisine. Mm-hmm. So could you tell us a little bit about your cooking venture? Because I was curious, you know, that really piqued my interest.
I've just ate the most beautiful food because I'm the cook in my house, and my missus, she's like, I'm going to cook some Jamaican pepper shrimp and some pepper crab and some mac and cheese and stuff. And I'm like, all right. And she's done it like really, really well. But yeah, man, I'm a food lover. I like food. I like different types of food. You know, I like to try different cuisines. I'm a culture person, so not just Jamaica. You know, I like to go to different places around the world and try the authentic foods from where they are and stuff. But when it comes to Jamaican food, yeah, that's my love. That's my heart. That's why I cook. And obviously, I've got a YouTube channel as well that's called Cook and Vibe. And Cook and Vibe is like a chance to really get to know M.Dot a little bit more. Like, then you see me, like, it's like whatever you see on the internet, it's like you see the behind the scenes of that on Cook and Vibe. It's like if I'm in Switzerland, you might see me on the freestyle, the interview that I've done, and you might see me doing a meet and greet. But like if you watch Cook and Vibe, then you'll see like the meet and greet, the interview, me eating the local food, me walking around, doing some other stuff and other stuff. And, you know, that's what Cook and Vibe's like. And there's cooking on there as well. I work with a Jamaican bridge in England called Ringo Vision, and he's got his YouTube channel. And me and him work quite like close together with the YouTube thing. He's got his channel, and he's like really good at what he does. Like he's like really like perfectionist, and the way he presents his food is like top class, and he's like really, really good Caribbean chef. So me and him and we do stuff as well, like you know, like crazy cooking, like things, little going out in the crazy, like we cook like with a barbecue on a train or in a shopping mall, or cooking underneath the ground, or yeah, all different kind of things. So yeah, that the cooking side of the YouTube channel is definitely worth a look at, and you get to see more of an understanding, like me when I'm more relaxed and chilled, and yeah, you see me cooking some Caribbean food and teaching you how to cook Caribbean food as well. Yeah, it's a teaching thing as well, and I base it off of giving knowledge of Jamaica. You know, I try and cover everything from, like, if it's Halloween, we're going to do ghost stories from Jamaica. You know, if it's Christmas time, we're going to do the authentic food that they have, and teaching the people what the culture is, what people have at Christmas time, you know, and making it as well, and showing people how to make it, and just making them understand that a little bit more, because I think it's inevitable, me as the most famous white guy in Jamaican culture. You know, I feel like that's my job to give back in that way and do my part. So like a lot of white people are going to relate to me naturally. It's not even a race thing. It's not a racist thing. It's nothing like that. It's just they're going to naturally gravitate towards me, because, you know, and it's nice that I can now teach people about Jamaica and the culture and all the things that I love about it as well. So yeah, man, if you ever watch my Instagram story, like, you'll see me post up videos and doing this and doing that, and then you might just see some random snacks, some random like stuff. I always keep that Jamaican culture, like showing people, right, this is the energy drinks, This is what supermarket looks like. These are the fruits. This is, have you ever seen this? And yeah, man, just that's, it makes me feel good as well. Makes me feel like, you know, that's my part. When someone says to me, are you a culture vulture? I'll be like, nah, bro, you can't call me that. I love this. I do this. I teach people Jamaican culture. I teach people old traditional recipes and loads of different stuff. So the love goes back into it. We don't just culture vultures when you just take from a culture and you don't give nothing back. So that's my way of giving back. Yeah, man.
That was something I noticed. And just from my perspective, I didn't understand how any of the criticism would be warranted, because you have been such a strong advocate. That's immediately what I noticed about you, is you've been such a strong advocate and just such, you know, incredible face for, you know, the beauty of the culture, brother, and basically teaching.
None of the negativity comes from Jamaican people, brother. I mean, I tell you that, bro. Mm-hmm. I tell you that. And if it comes from a Jamaican, they don't live in Jamaica.
Yeah.
They don't live there. They live in Canada or UK, and they're in a different system. And bro, Jamaican people are very, very proud people. Mm-hmm. Very proud people. Yo, we have the best weed in the world, man. Yo, we have the best woman in our world, man. We have the best food in our world. We have the best dance in our world. That's what they're like. They're not. Jamaican people are very tough people, mm-hmm. and loving people. So if you love them and you love the culture, and they look upon a white man, they say, yo, me like that white youth, they love the culture, him love Jamaica. Yeah, man, you're good, brother. And they love that, man. They love that, and we embrace that. And they do embrace me. And I'm not going to say that's every single Jamaican, but I'm saying 95% of Jamaican.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they will definitely back me up.
100%. Well, it does bring me to my next point, because with the incredible work you've been doing, as you said, you know, promoting Jamaican culture through music, through food,
yeah.
through dance, all of these various avenues. Tell me more about how you grew up. Just some interesting anecdotes, some stories about where you come from in the UK. You know, kind of share that experience with me, what it was like growing up when you were younger and just maybe some things you've learned.
So growing up as a young kid, we lived on like a council estate, they call it. I think in America, you might call them the projects. But it was a housing estate that we grew up on, and it was predominantly white. And it was rough. But then, like, my influence from black culture was heavy, because my older brother, my older sister, even at them times, there was like, my brother was heavily listening to hip hop music, like heavily. He used to like collect like tape cassettes of hip, like he was like heavily into it. And my sister, same way. So, growing up a little bit like older than that, when I'm sort of reaching to a sort of about age of like 10, 11, my sister had then moved away from the predominantly white area into a predominantly black area. And she was with a Jamaican at the time. And my mum and dad split up and whatnot at them times there. And we'd go for like Christmas at my sister's in London. You know, so we was around, you know, her partner and whatnot. On Boxing Day, we'd go to their family's house and have dinner at their family's house. So everyone was Jamaican, so it was a whole, you know. So from then, our family was like all involved with Jamaican family. So it was all like kind of normal. And that's when I kind of started doing music and got my first kind of lyrics and stuff like that. And then going on a little bit later in life, sort of like 15, 16, I moved back to London again. Same area where my sister was, and then went back to where I was before, and then went back there for like a good few years from when I was sort of like 18 till I was maybe like 26. And again, in a predominantly black area, I was the only white boy out of all my friends, you know. So the whole that the kind of influence was from there. And when I was 18, my sister got married in the Caribbean. And I spent like a good like 6 weeks in a place called St. Vincent, just across from Barbados. And like, we're in no hotel, like it was a culture shock, big culture shock. But like, that's when I really got to live the Caribbean. So when it comes to like later on in life, when I'm doing my thing and I'm trying to be an artist and whatnot, and I'm going to Jamaica, I've been to the Caribbean before, kind of understand it. I've been around Jamaican people all my life. I understand it a lot. I've listened to this music for years, so I dress how they dress, and it the first time, you know, I'm very comfortable. Even like the first time I went to Jamaica, it was still a shock, and I wasn't even not any known for music, like hardly like then. But they were still like, I always caused like a scene wherever I went. Like, yo, this white boy, like he's wearing Clarks and he's walking us like a bad boy. And they used to call me a gangster back then. But I truly say I'm not, but I truly say because I'm an artist, I look a certain type of way. They used to say, oh, rude boy, oh, bad boy, oh, gangster. You know, I just went to Jamaica for years, just loved it. Just kept going back there for years and years and years and years and years, and just built my life, like, kind of like there, and my whole friendship and family and everything, you know? Yeah, man.
Absolutely. Well, tell me about how, in that case, you started to build your family, because you mentioned your partner, and I'd like to hear more about that.
I met my partner about 5 years ago. I had a kid years ago, just after I moved out of London. She's grown up now. Not that grown up. She's just early teens. And I met the woman I'm with now, maybe just under 6 years ago. Four kids. Family life, man. Yeah. But she's a hot gal. Yeah, man, she's a hot gal. So it's not like we live quite a fun lifestyle, even though we've got kids and stuff. Like she's a hot gal, and she likes nice things and spending money and nice food and lobster and all every night. So we live a like nice lifestyle. We eat nice food and we've got a nice little family life, a little cat and a couple cats and everything there. So yeah, it's funny because she, whatever's away from like sometimes she's, especially recently, she's saying, yo, remember, so we still got kids and you still got to do the washing up. And I'm like, yo, I'm a celebrity now. But no, man, you know, the family's nice, man. And I've got my other family, you know, which I built in Jamaica, you know, years ago. I was going there loads of times. Loads of times I went to Jamaica. But for some reason, I was going to quite tourist places. Not necessarily being a tourist or like I was coming out of the tourist areas and doing whatever I was doing every single time. But the areas I was going, I wasn't really going to Kingston and Portmore, which are the cities. And that's where like I'd built like a lot of friends and a lot of music associates over like WhatsApp groups, social media, built a lot of friends and associates and stuff through that. And a lot of them was in Kingston and Portmore. So I went to Jamaica loads of times, man, but didn't end up really spending enough time in Kingston and Portmore. And one of the times I went to Jamaica, it must have been about the fifth or sixth time I went to Jamaica. And I was actually, I was good friends with a Jamaican guy who was from England. He was from Jamaica. And we was going out there at the same time. And I was going to stay at, his mum's got a yard there and we was going to go out to Jamaica and we was going to stay at his yard out there and yeah, there for a couple of weeks. So we was getting different flights. We was getting different flights. So I think he was flying in Kingston and I was flying in Montego Bay. So anyway, I remember I got to Jamaica. And I phoned my brethren there, like, where are you? Like, thinking he's going to be in Jamaica. And I had got my brethren, who I'm known from social media, to rent a car and come and pick me up and drop me to my brethren from England's place in Jamaica, which was in the countryside. He missed his flight. My brethren from England missed his flight. So I'm like, I ain't got no hotel book. I'm staying at his yard, remember? And he's not there. But he's saying like, yo, look, just go there. Like, you're going to go to this place. They'll come and give you a key. Just let yourself in and just do your thing. You're good. But like, I don't know this area, man. Like, I don't know nothing about, like, I'm not really that comfortable. But I've got three of my mates outside in the car who I feel comfortable around. And they're like, yo, just come to Portmore, man. My brother's like, just stay on my sofa. And I'm like, all right, fuck it. And I remember, man, like, you know, smoking my weed and it was dark. So smoking my weed and it was like a 4-hour drive. And I remember I was kind of sleepy. And I remember opening my eyes and getting out of the car and looking around in Portmore thinking, fuck. Oh my God, I am really in the ghetto. Like, you talk about Chicago and places like that in America, and you talk about England and Peck, but I'm telling you, bro, when you pull up in Kingston and Portmore, it's third world ghetto. You understand? It's different, man. And I remember thinking, wow. And my brethren was like, yo, there's a little stage show thing going on around the corner, just like an outside thing and some artists are performing that we should go around there. And I said, yeah, man, all right then. So as we're driving, I'm seeing a couple of people that I'm not. I'm like, yeah, my G, big up my bro. Like, this is how we doing. I'm like, yo, but they are my bro. Gone round to the show and there's loads of people there I know. And it was like, all right, okay, this is cool. So, going on years later now, obviously every time I go to Jamaica, I'm going Portmore and Kingston and stuff. Like, I love the countryside. I'm still spending time in the countryside and stuff. And even there's a place called Port Antonio, which is in Portland. I'm like a local in that little town there. Everyone knows me there. But in Kingston specifically, that's where I've built my family. You know, I was linked with some people back then, and you know, we like for like 6, 7, 8, 9 years maybe, like they've been there and I've been friends with them and they've been around me when I've been going, when nobody knew I was. And it was pushing my music and helping me when nobody knew I was. Forward all these years later, you know, and my manager is a bredgin from Kingston. And yeah, we've built like a proper family, man. Like that, the little ghetto in Kingston, I just pull up. It's like my home. Like I pull up anytime. Anytime I'm in Jamaica on the TV, want to interview me or some famous vloggers want to come down, like I always bring them down to that place and highlight the place and give it a strength, as we would say. So yeah, man, I've got my family, the man them, big up Love Lane, Kingston, big up the man them. You know, big up my manager, Z Highest. Yeah, man, he's been there from the start. So big up YGP, that's the management company, YGP. My artist name is Z Highest and the man them in Love Lane, which is a dangerous part of Kingston, man. Very dangerous part of Kingston. So it's nice to bring a little bit of happiness into a really poor, deprived and dangerous area. It's nice, man. It's nice. And hopefully we can all get rich.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's really just speaking to how amazing the country is, just how amazing the people are. And I mean, it should incentivize so many people who are watching this show, you know, to want to pay Jamaica a visit.
I love it. There's just nothing that I don't love about it, bro. Like, honestly, man, Jamaica's just the best place in the world. Like, there's a fucking party every single night. If you're in Kingston. And it's like, you know, like you go out on a Friday night, it's like, yo, the big party's happening Friday night. No, the big party's happening every night. You know, and it's just really nice. Like me, I fit in there. Like I'm not a drinker. I'm not really a drinker. I've never been I don't get drunk and loud and abrupt. I don't get like that. I get drunk. And I get on a nice little wave, and I might get on a nice little wave. Anything further than that, I'm going to sleep. Jamaica is not a place where people go out to get drunk. They go out to enjoy themselves, you know, and you're in the dance and like you're there and the music's playing and the DJ's hyping it up. And you got fire blazing and you got all like the male dancers and they're all like in their big group and they're all doing the dance moves to the song. And then you look over and there's a big group of girls and they're doing all their dance moves. And, you know, you look around and it's like not even half of the people in the crowd have even got an alcoholic drink in their hand. They're just dancing. And the weed man's walking around like, oh, I need a spliff. Nice, easy, spill a spliff. You don't even need to drink. Spill another spliff. I feel a little bit too drunk at the moment. I don't want to drink no more. Feel a spliff. Chill out. Yeah, man. Nice, man. To the fact where, like, you know, like weed's legal to a certain degree. You know, you're walking with your weed. You don't really have to worry about the police watching you with your weed. You can kind of walk freely. It's quite a loud country. I'm a loud person. Yo, my G. Wagwan family, everything good. Yeah, man, we're good, man. We want to go in the shop. You want to go in the shop and you ask how much something. Mama, oh, what's the price there? Yeah, nobody takes offence to that. You can't go into a place in England and there's two people in a queue and you say, yo, how much is this Wrigley's chewing gum? You can't do that. Over in Jamaica, you can do that. It's free. It's just a bit more free. Oh, yeah, good, man. Everything's just good, man. People don't take things too seriously. It's no problem. Like they say, no problem. Nothing's really a problem. And everything good, man. Right? You'd get a situation like, just for instance, if you was in a taxi and you lost your wallet, I feel like Jamaica would be the safest, best place to lose your wallet and not be able to pay because, I've lost my arm. You lose your wallet? Bumbuckler, am I going to give it to you first? You know? Bumbuckler, we are talking about you lost your wallet. next thing you know, he'll be taking you to get you something to eat and drop you off and you're cool and he's calm. It's like, I mean, you're good, man. No problem, man. You're good, man. That's what it's like, then. They're good people. They're good people. The best people.
You know, that brings me back to London, because there clearly is a contrast, okay, between maybe your experiences in Jamaica and South London. I'd like for you to speak to me more about the scene in South London and kind of walk me through that vibe, walk me through that, you know, just that atmosphere.
South London is heavily influenced by Jamaica. I mean, if I was literally to say that South London, this is a Jamaican populated area. The Jamaican people here, this is a Jamaican populated area. There's quite a lot of Jamaican people here. There's a lot of Jamaican people here. The whole place is covered with Jamaicans. Like, Peckham is a predominantly black area. A lot of Jamaicans there. Like, I'm not too familiar with Peckham, but like the other day I got a booking and I walked around off this high street and I just see like a big group of people. And I'm like, rah, you know you're in the ghetto. And I'm like, rah, let me walk back that way. So I walk back in and I thought, so I can hear Jamaican accents. And I hear Jamaican accents. And from time I hear Jamaican accents, I know I'm good. And then all of a sudden, one of us notices, yo, artist, what are you on? And then my next thing I know, I got a cup in my hand. I got rum in. I'm drinking rum and sitting there chilling with them. So like Peckham is like that. You know, you got places like, then you got Peck. All right, so you got Southwest London. So you got, in Southwest London, you got like, no, let me get to that, because it's Southeast London. That's where I lived. And you got like Lewisham, again, a predominantly black area. You've got Woolwich, which is very, very, very mixed between like black, like African, Jamaican, white. A few other, you know, Somalians and all different types, you know. And then you go over this way a little bit now down, you got like Croydon, and like you've got like areas in Croydon, like Fulton Heath, like it's like literally like it's Jamaica, bro. You got a jerk chicken shop and Caribbean bakery, and any Caribbean food you can think of, you can buy it. And then you go over to Southwest London, you got like a place like Brixton. And Brixton is like Little Jamaica. It's called, like, they call it Little Jamaica. It's literally like you can get like any snack, any drink, any fruit, as long as it's in season, any fish, any type of meat, anything from Jamaica is there. And you get there and you feel like Jamaica. Like you get there, when you get there, you can hear reggae music playing and you see the Rasta man there on the corner, and It's that vibe. So we're really close to Jamaica. Like even like our accent in South London, like when we say Wagwan and yes my G and safe, respect, and a lot of our slang comes from Jamaica. So like even like how we talk. So yeah, we've got a very close relationship, and that's why I don't think a lot of people know that and understand that, excuse me. That's why it's so easy for me to talk in Jamaican, bro. Easy, brother. The whole life, me Jamaican, 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 Jamaican. Bro, so much. Easy for me to talk it, brother, man. And I'm not on that, man. Because we're there on it from we little, man. From we little and young and tiny, we're there on it. You see me, son? And I'm nothing for catch a lingo quick and fast, cow. More time, we're not even changing our accent too much.
Well, that puts it in context for me, because South London, people aren't too familiar in the United States with South London in particular, but they've heard the term used. They've heard the geographic term used, South London.
Right.
So definitely it makes sense that a lot of the slang had originated from Jamaican culture. I find that so fascinating.
Yeah, man.
No, it really sounds amazing. Just to put that in perspective, just your thoughts on Jamaica and how much influence you've, you know, brought back with you. It's crazy. Yeah, I understand, coming off all of that, there's a documentary right now in the works about you.
Yeah.
So could you?
I had an interview this morning, same way with someone in Australia,
mm-hmm.
and they said the same thing, and it fascinates me, like how people even find out, because there's not even much like really out there about it. So how do people know? And it's like, it's crazy, man. Like I'm seeing some next level promotion. Like someone sent me something this morning, and it's like some American something, and it's got like Jada Pinkett, and they're talking about, and then they start talking about me and like Jamaica and this new song, and it's like on everybody's Snapchat.
That's right.
It's crazy, man. It's crazy. But what was he saying?
Well, could you give a peek into it? I know you can't reveal that much, but you know, maybe a sneak peek. Right. Yeah.
So they followed me for years, man. Years. Yeah, man, they followed me for years now, maybe 5-6 years. Literally, like, they've got the whole story from, you know, from the where I was in, out of London, where I was living in London. They've been to Jamaica with me various times. They've caught the whole story, like, right up until a certain point. Obviously, like, the story's just going crazy. It had to stop at a certain point, but it's definitely, mm-hmm. like, a success story, you know? Yeah, man.
Of course.
But, yeah, man, I can't wait. It's finished now anyway. I think we've got like a one more day's filming, but like, yeah, we're pretty much a wrap now. So I don't think it'll be out this year now. I think it'll be early next year now. That'll be out.
Well, it sounds good. Well, it kind of brings me into the final chapter of the interview, because I'm curious now on your thoughts just on the scene in the United States. We touched on in the beginning of the interview, you know, if you wanted to do a remix with a US-based artist. But I'm just curious on your thoughts on the UK influences, the dancehall culture in the United States right now. Do you follow it? What are your thoughts?
No, I don't really know what's going on, like, with the whole dancehall scene in America. Like, it's funny, in the dancehall industry, if you're not really popping in Jamaica and it's not really happening in Jamaica, it's quite difficult to even get yourself even heard and known around. So, yeah, I'm not sure. And I'm not even sure the influence that it's having. All I do know is that I'm getting a lot of attention from the States, man. And my statistics tell me there's a lot of people from the States, man. It's exciting, man, because I don't know. I've been to Michigan. I done my first show in Michigan a few months ago, and it was nice, man. And everywhere I went, I got recognized. Like, and I was only going to different airports, but like, I got to Florida, walked into like the kind of like, you know, like the little touristy kind of stores where you buy the good things, and everyone's recognizing me there. And then even like coming back, and in Washington, and then in New York, and so on. So. It's exciting, man. It's exciting to see, you know, obviously nobody knows how famous MDR is and how far it's gone, because it's kind of like just the beginning of the story of fame on that level. So it's like, we don't know yet. Like, I went to Sweden a couple of weeks ago and done a meet and greet, and like hundreds of people are there. So it's like, I just don't know. So it's like really exciting to just see what the future brings and just travel to different countries and just see where the fans are and just experience life and see the world and just give people my music, man.
That's it. Well, looking ahead, because as you said, it's just the beginning. Looking ahead, what can everyone expect in terms of new projects, new music, releases, collaborations beyond the remixes? Like, what's ahead for you?
So there's going to be an EP dropping early next year. I was trying to do it for the end of this year, but it's going to be too big. I'm not going to be able to get it done. So I'm going to be dropping like a full works project at the beginning of next year, an EP, like I say, probably like a 10-track EP. Watch out for some big features. Yeah, man, watch out for some big features as well. there's definitely going to be some big features, and I think the features that I'm doing recently are going to open a lot of doors for that as well. Look out for my headline show in London on the 27th of January in London. The plan is to go to Canada after London and then go to the States. I've got a booking in Michigan already. I definitely want to try and get a booking and get something set for New York. And I'd love to go to LA or Florida or Miami, you know, so any of them places there, I think, you know, would be nice. And see what happens, man. So just look out for me, because I'm going to be the biggest thing that dancehall music and UK music has ever seen. This is just literally, there's not ever been anybody like me, bro. There's never going to be anyone like me again after this. This is history. This is one in a million, and never find another M-Dot. When I'm gone, they're going to remember me. And believe you me, bro, people just watch out, because believe me, you're going to see me everywhere. Everywhere. Everywhere.
That's it, brother. Well, it's certainly true. I loved our conversation. I love the personal aspects, the professional aspects. It was a really great conversation. I just want to thank you for being here. And of course, you've got me as a fan. So we're just going to keep it moving.
Respect, man.
Thank you so much, brother.
I love and respect every time, my brother, man. I mean, enough respect, you know?